Welcome to a Paul Carenza podcast. Where have we been all this time? We had a gap for Christmas, which also then grew into January. That was a gap as well. I mean, they say that old Christmas goes to February the 2nd, so I think it's absolutely fine. We've had a long Christmas break. Welcome to a Paul Carenza podcast, bringing to you the finest conversations we can find with people we are catching up with. That's what we're currently doing on this podcast channel. And this time, catching up with Rachel Krieger. She's the British comedy circuit's only practicing orthodox female comic. And as you're hearing the podcast, I get those adjectives in all the wrong order once again. But Rachel's fantastic. We've had a lovely chat, particularly dwelling on the differences, but the crossovers between her being a Jewish comedian doing shows for synagogues as well as the stand-up circuit, and then me being a Christian doing shows for churches and also the stand-up circuit. So we meet in the middle, and yet our gigs for places of worship as well have obviously a lot in common. So we had a great chat as well, and talking about humour in dark places and dark times, which unfortunately we find ourselves in again, from pandemic to a time of well, potentially European warfare is where we are, find ourselves now. So I hope this finds you well where you are. I hope that you get something out of this podcast for the next wee while. And yeah, I just hope that the conversation that we have helps in some way lift you where you are, encourage you in some vague small way, maybe, hopefully. And I just wish you well. Elsewhere, I am, of course, doing my other podcast, The British Broadcasting Century, and that's continuing apace there. And I'm also starting, as we mentioned in this podcast, a new podcast called the Religion Media Centre podcast. I'm one of six co-hosts on that. We have different guests every month. We look at the religious news stories of the day. We chat with journalists, the people behind the stories. And it's a fantastic gathering of people on that. So I chatted on the most recent episode to Rachel in just a 5-minute chunk, but I really wanted to chat to her more, which is why you find us here today. So you can find the Religion Media Centre podcast wherever you find podcasts. You can find the British Broadcasting Century podcast elsewhere too. And Rachel Krieger's podcast is called Jew Talking to Me. It's a podcast chat with different people of the Jewish faith. But here she chats to someone of the Christian faith. That's me, Paul Carenza. Hello. This is a Paul Carenza podcast, catching up with Rachel Krieger. Welcome to the podcast then today. Fantastic. Rachel Krieger, who is, I'm going to do this from memory, having, I wrote it down before, but who needs notes when you know that Rachel Krieger is the UK comedy circuit's only British, no, hang on, that's, you know, the UK and British is the same thing. That's an extraneous word.
That's a bigger question, I think, than a podcast can handle.
It is. It's a very good point. Let's build up to that. UK comedy circuit's only practicing orthodox female, I got the wrong order. I think female comes before practice. Doesn't matter, does it? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter. No, still me.
How do you define it? Can you define yourself? Are you just a person who tells jokes in places that book you and that's it?
I mean, yes, but also many other things.
So much else.
So much more. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think it's clear to say to people, I'm the only practicing orthodox Jewish woman on the comedy circuit, because that immediately gives you a definition and parameters within which to work.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I should have just asked you, because you can clearly describe yourself far better than I can with my clumsy adjectives in the wrong order. So how long have you been gigging now? And has that been a mix then of sort of circuit gigs and also gigs in the Jewish arena?
I love the idea of a Jewish arena, just be full of people arguing and trying to see who's got what food.
Could you tell that I didn't know how that sentence was going to end when I started it? I went for arena.
Anyway. I was sort of hovering around the fringes of comedy for a very long time, mainly because I didn't really think there'd be space for somebody like me in it. So I focused on writing it, you know, for other people and for theatre, and directing it and directing other people for stand-up and for theatre, and just doing little bits here and there. And then it just suddenly got to the point where it was an overwhelming drive to be a club comic. Like, that specifically was what I wanted to do. I was already an entertaining speaker in synagogues and stuff, and I've been involved in some way in performing since I was very small. I was in choirs and I was in school shows and I was in community theatre and lots of other sort of things, and as an adult in musical theatre predominantly. And then I just suddenly had a moment where I was watching another comic who I'd directed and co-written their Edinburgh show, and I just thought to myself, I'd quite like to be saying those words now properly, not just always, not just like a here and there thing, whatever. And I didn't know how people would react because I run a comedy club, or I did pre-pandemic, and I'd been writing, directing, and it felt a bit like, you know, that expression, innkeeper turned poacher, whichever way
Oh,
round it is, like when you
yeah.
hop over the fence. And I thought, are people going to think like, who does she think she is, like clambering into our space? And all I got was support. Like, it was amazing. And so many people who've said at the time, well, we've just been waiting for this actually, because you know we've all heard you do bits, and this is what you're meant to be doing really. And that was very generous and amazing, really. And so that was around 2015, 2016. And I decided, you know what? Instead of going to all the people I've booked or I've worked with and saying, can you put me in your gigs? I'm a big believer in earning your stripes. And I thought, I know how to be funny for 40 minutes. I don't know how to do 5 minutes. Like, I've never had to do that before.
Okay.
So I
Yeah.
went onto the open mic circuit for about a year, year and a half, just to learn how to do tight fives, to deal with proper hecklers, to kind of learn the craft of it a little bit more. Because I was very fascinated by the idea, and I still am, of watching how a different group of people manage the same room. And even now, like, I try not to double, and unless the money's good, or I'm not an idiot, but I try not to double because I love going and watching a whole show and seeing if it's a mixed bill, and seeing how that compere, that closer, that opener, the middles, how they all deal with the interactions in that same space. I find it so interesting.
Yeah, wow. So much there to sort of dig into. So, by the sound of it, then, if you could do, I love that idea. You could do a 40 minutes, but five is
Yeah.
sort of what's the five? Is it a case of kind of chipping away then to find the five that you've already got within that 40, or are you kind of coming up from scratch, going, right, we need some new stuff here to, because it's a different thing, isn't it? The 5 minutes and the
Yeah,
tight
it's a
five, yeah.
completely different skill, and also because you can't kind of, if you're used to sort of getting up and being like a speaker at an event, or a host of an event, then you can sort of draw on old stuff. You can relate to stuff in the room. You can kind of waffle your way through things on your personality. I think you can skate on your personality quite a lot. Whereas if you have to do a tight five, it has to be content rich. I mean, that's what it's about. And so I didn't really look at old stuff for that the first time out. I just thought, well, what am I really interested in that isn't something I would normally talk about? And I'm going to explore that and see if I can find a tight 5 minutes out of that. And it was actually bees, the stripy insects, that I decided to write about, because
Okay,
I
that's
thought no one would be interested in like my weird religious Jewish life. Like, who does that relate to? So I went for bees, and it's come bizarrely quite full circle because I've revisited that whole set, which is now a 10 actually, for my next Edinburgh show. Like, the bees have finally found their place.
The bees have landed. This is lovely.
They have, yeah, it's quite
But I bet
sweet.
you find this, I would have thought people would be fascinated to know about your the religious side of things as well, and that background. But have you found that on the circuit, or is it sort of you talk about religion and people go and freeze? I don't know. Is it a mix?
No, that is what happened really, is that every so often, particularly if I was hosting, because I compared a lot before I went in, I didn't really used to do sets. I used to do a lot of comparing back in the day. So I suddenly found that if I make throwaway remarks that related to my Jewishness, or you know, my lens of experiencing the world, because it's not like a RE lesson, then people would be really fascinated. And again, like people who are more experienced than me, whose advice I would seek on how to progress and how I was doing. And all said, but you've got a USP. Like, it seems actually quite ridiculous not to try and draw on that. And what I found over the years is, now that my content is, I would say, 99%, you know, it's just observational comedy, but through my Jewish experience, is that people are really interested. But also, it is very relatable, because if you grew up in any kind of ethnic home or faith home, you'll have had some similar experience. Or I find I talk a lot about my grandparents who were refugees and immigrants. That is actually not an uncommon thing now in Britain. And people will say to me, oh, when my grandparents came from India, they were exactly like that, or you know, that sort of thing. And also, like, my club set is about the way faith schools teach sex education. And whatever kind of faith school you went to, It's triggering and very familiar.
Yeah.
That's what I've
It's
discovered.
funny. It's one of those headlines you just go, oh yeah, instant gold. I can just see
Yeah.
that working straight away. Fantastic. Yeah, very nice too. Yeah.
So, yeah, people do seem to be. I think it's just when I understood that we're all just people, really, and we all went to school. We've all been somebody's kids. We've all, had certain experiences in common. And actually, it's finding the common ground. And you don't have to. I think at the beginning, I was very concerned I'd have to constantly explain things in great depth if I was going to say them. But sometimes, just like a throwaway remark is enough, like a little topper, a little something, just to contextualize it. You don't have, no one needs to have read 17 rabbis' commentaries on whatever it is. I think I just described in one of my solo shows, I described the process of sitting shiva, which is the 7 day mourning period that Jews experience after a bereavement. And I think I just said, I went to a shiva, which is like a wake for a week without wine. That's all anyone needs. What else do people need to know? They don't need to know about the prayers. They don't need to know who comes or how you sit. The point for the, you just have to get there as quickly as possible, which is true of all jokes.
Yeah, and I guess, and as an audience member, I guess we're happy to just kind of pick things up. And sometimes you might slightly miss a thing and go, I don't quite know all about that. But often you go, as soon as you realise, if the story you're telling is actually about a gathering of people, then whether it's a shiva, whether it's a wedding, whether whatever it might
Yeah.
be, we pick it up, don't we? And we learn a bit in the process. I think we all, it's a richer experience for all of us, I think, isn't it? When we can go to comedy clubs and not just hear. For, I mean, speaking as a white male middle class stand up, but for white male middle class stand ups, but doing the same sort of, and I remember those gigs you get to, thankfully not for a while now, where a comedian would arrive late doing the double that you've just said about,
Yeah.
and they'd say, oh, so what have you talked about? Have you done,
Oh, that's the
sex? Have you
worst.
done George W. Bush? Have you done whatever? And people go, oh, yeah, I've done that, but I've not done that. And you can do that line about the Americans in and blah, blah, blah. You think, oh, come on, there's so many topics we could be talking about here,
Yeah. And I also hate when people come in late and then they ask the same person in the audience the same question, and then the audience will get so fed up. Like, we have to remember that this is like an exchange between us and the audience, and there needs to be some kind of quality in that interaction. So it's a tough thing. It's interesting. I did a little experiment. I think you might find this interesting anyway.
Yes.
A few years ago, because I had a situation where a couple of bookers said they didn't really want me to in their clubs because they thought I was too niche. And these are people who hadn't ever seen me perform. And I thought, really? I'm actually massively mainstream, if anything. I'm happy to be mainstream. But I thought, I wonder how niche I could get just for the enjoyment of the experience of having the opportunity to just say stuff. So I wrote a set which was so nichely Jewish. I think you'd have to be actually quite orthodox, probably too orthodox, go and see a woman standing on a stage
Right.
talking to understand it. They were like really intensely Jewish jokes. And I thought it'd be curious to see whether the cadence of comedy in terms of your voice would be enough to make an audience laugh at it. I just thought it'd be like quite a fun thing. So I went to a couple of like free open mic-y pub gigs to do it because I wouldn't have wanted someone to pay good money to be part of my scientific experiment. But I thought it would be interesting to see if that happened. And actually, some of them work quite well because even though there's absolutely no way that audience understood a word that came out of my mouth, it sounded so silly that it was kind of funny.
That's nice.
And some of them just stared at me, but that can happen even if you're literally talking their
Yeah,
language. So I
that's
don't
so
know that
true.
that's it. But it was quite an enjoyable experience just to see. And I actually did a gig in, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was about October, November last year for a group of very, very orthodox women. And I finally got to use that as a kind of actual set of piece of material
Nice.
where they all laughed. So that was
That's
quite
lovely.
nice.
Yeah, it goes to, I've that's a good theory. I like that cadence. Well, I can, I mean, without the clang of a name drop thing, but I used to write for Miranda Hart for her TV show,
Miranda Hart.
and I wrote a couple. I wrote literally two jokes for her stage show for the when she did this tour around, well, the arena we talked of the when she did the O2 thing, and just wrote literally. I wrote a bunch. I wrote loads more than that, but she picked two that finally made the 90 minutes of the show, and. I went to see it. I saw it at the very first gig, which was at my little pub in Guildford. I booked her to come along and do a little try-out thing. And then at the very last gig of the tour, which was at the packed out O2, and she knew I was in. So when she got to my joke that I'd written for her, she knew roughly she could spot me down near the on the side there. And She did the joke with a little wink to me, but because of that, she overthought it and she got the words wrong and she missed out like the
Oh
two key words that make sense of the joke. And so I was looking, going, that's not the joke. That doesn't, that's not a joke.
no.
That doesn't, that's not funny. It doesn't make any sense at all. But you look around, you go, but everyone's still laughing. Why is that?
Well, of
And you
course,
go, because
they
it
love
sounds
her.
like a joke. And it just
Yeah.
go, it didn't matter that it didn't make any sense. She said it in the way that the cadence was right, as you said, and it just, you know, if you've got the stage presence and the personality and it sounds like a joke, well, most you go, it's probably a joke, you know.
Yeah, and she's got funny bones, hasn't she? So the audience are all with her, and they assume if she's saying it, even if I don't get it, I assume she knows better than me what's funny.
There's a bit
So,
of that, isn't there? Yeah, but I
maybe.
reckon, I don't know, I don't think I've ever seen a comedian on stage literally speak a different language to me. I'm trying to work it out, but actually, I did one German language comedy club in Berlin once, and I didn't speak a word of German. But I was just trying to think, would you laugh at a thing if you literally understood nothing? But actually, you can see, as long as other people are having fun, you think, yeah, there's. I think nowadays I would. I'm just overwhelmingly can't wait to get back into, you
Yeah.
know, the joy of going to a live venue again. Yeah, I'd just laugh at anything now. I think it's just, if it sounds like a joke, I'd laugh. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway.
How did you feel when Miranda messed your joke up?
Well, she got the other one right, so that's okay. I'll
Oh,
take
thank
that. You
goodness.
know, one out of two is not bad, is it? But you did sort of think, oh, come on, we've come all this way. You know, you could have got the thing right, but yeah, it was. And then of course you think of the jokes that I'd submitted to her that she didn't do, and you think you should have just done one of those. They were good.
Yeah.
They're easy to remember, you know. But
I think those are the little things because comedians are quite obsessive by nature. And I think those are the little things that will stay with you your whole life. Like when you're 98 years old and you're sitting at they're attempting to get you some kind of slow aerobic activity from your chair in the old age home. And if someone said to you, what was it like when you went to see Miranda Hart in 2020 or whenever it was? You'd be like, well, she didn't do the joke I would have liked her to do, and she messed up one of the ones. But the other one she told great, you won't ever forget that.
Yeah, that's true. There's stuff like that. That's my, I mean, it is my abiding memory of that evening, you know, certainly.
Yeah.
So the rest of it, I can't remember any of the rest of the show, just the joke she got wrong. But
There's I
yeah.
did a show at Arts Depot, which is like my local theatre to where I am now. And it was I know, you know, as I say, I never thought that there'd be space someone like me on the circuit, and I'm so thrilled that there is. And when I did my first tour of the UK, that was like my final show, and it sold out, and it was just incredible to be in their main space with the whole big audience, who were like, I'd say 50% people I knew, but it was like such a home. I was like on their shoulders. Do you know what I mean? It was the
Yeah.
most gorgeous atmosphere. Everyone laughed at everything. It was always going to be a great gig, let's face it. And an easy audience, on my side. And it was fantastic. I had a best time. I got a standing ovation. I felt on top of the world. And between coming off stage at the end and getting to the dressing room, it's I don't know, about 8 seconds, but my husband came like running down. He came like round the back to see me to say, well done, it was amazing. Whatever. By the time he came in the room, I had like my head in my hands and I was almost in tears. So he said, what's the matter? And I said, there was a topper on a joke I forgot to do. And he said, so what? And I said, because everything else, it was all perfect, but I forgot to add this line, and I could tell you the line now. The line was, she didn't have any medical qualifications, but she did laugh at all my jokes.
Right.
That you can put it on my gravestone, that line. Oh, it'll be.
It's there. Yeah. And instantly, even without knowing the context, I can tell it's a funny joke. It sounds like a
Ah,
joke. And it
thank you,
worked.
Paul.
It's you know, just slot that back into the show, and then it would have been fine, wouldn't it? But
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's those, and it's the long drives home. If you've got like if the gig's 2 hours away or something, and you're driving home, going,
Yeah.
if only just that one little line. There's always the ones that
One
go away,
line.
aren't there?
Or if I'd said that back to that person in the audience where they said whatever, yeah, it was fun. And usually, I find that if it's been a bad gig or it hasn't gone well, I don't obsess about it like I do if it's been a good gig where I could have made it, I don't know, a fifth of a percent better, in my opinion. Like no one's gone away thinking, like no one left Arts Depot thinking, well, I've been robbed. Like there was definitely a sense of something missing at
Where
that
was that
moment.
topper?
Out of that hour and a quarter, there was definitely like 3 seconds that weren't as good. But I felt it in
You
the
know it.
marrow of my bones.
Yeah, you know it. That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. Yeah, I did the longest I've I did a conference for again on the religion matter. It was for church ministers across country, and they put me up overnight, and they booked me for like the after dinner thing. And I think it was meant to be about 45 to 60 minutes, I think. Which at the time I thought, oh, it's gonna be quite a while because you look at the audience, I'm not sure about this. But then at the end, you think, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying overnight, so here we are. And I was about to leave the stage after like an hour, and then someone said, look, we'll buy you a drink if you if you just keep it, we got nothing else. The bar, you know, as soon as the show's over, that's it. We go to bed. So, go and do a bit more. Oh, I'll do another 10 minutes. And I think I've got about 2 hours 10 in the end. And at
Oh,
that
my
point, I
goodness.
was just going, "This is every joke I've ever written. I don't know anything else. I know no other words than this." And then, of course, you still walk off and go, "Oh, there was that one more bit I could have done," you know. But not saying it was quality; it was quantity, if nothing else. But yeah.
Do you find there's like a difference between your sort of Christian or church-based groups for gigs and secular groups?
Well, yeah, and likewise back to you. Well, less Christian, more Jewish, I imagine, but feel free to answer either.
I've done both.
You've done both, there
I
you
did a
go.
gig
Well,
in a church 2 weeks ago.
oh, well, we can talk about that. There you go. You're on my circuit, yeah, lovely. I mean, I'm very different, I would say. I did the circuit gigs first, and I was a Christian, but I wasn't talking about it particularly much because I didn't have much funny to say about it. So only after about 6 7 years, I started doing church events, and I did it wrong to begin with. Because I just walked in and just did my secular set in churches, even like a clean version, but still it was even a clean secular set I found was too kind of boisterous almost for if you railroad them, it was like a bit, you know, scary. So now I sort of spend the first few minutes just putting them at ease, spend a good bit of time going, it's going to be all right, you know, don't worry. If you brought a friend here thinking, you know, because you get the Christian and non-Christian next to each other, like drag the neighbours along. And the Christians are worried it's going to be offensive, and the non-Christians are worried it's going to be twee and a bit, you know, tame. So you've got to kind of make both happy in the first few minutes, you know. So I spend more time doing atmosphere setting, I guess, in church events. But yeah, how's it been for you then? What's your?
Well, I did Jewish ones before I did mainstream ones,
Yeah.
just that how life carried it along its little way. And I find it really depends on the group. Like if it's in a place of worship, I think it actually really jars with people if you try and be too clubby. Not exactly what you said, not if I don't swear, and my material's, very family friendly, but it's just if you say something that's going to make them uncomfortable, they do feel like the weight of God is behind you. And that. Actually, I had a very specific experience like that where I was invited pe to perform across an event in a synagogue over the whole of Sabbath. And so I was staying there. And Friday night, they said to me, we're doing Friday night, but not all our community is very religious. Some people won't be able to get there early enough. We don't want people to feel alienated. So what we're going to do is we'll do the Sabbath. It was winter, so Sabbath begins quite early. So we're going to do our prayers at the right time. And then we're going to get you to perform for about 45 minutes, and then we'll do dinner after that, and then people can come at whatever stage, those who work and they don't take time, they can't in the winter stop early for Sabbath and everything. We don't want anyone to feel alienated. Let's do it like that. And I was like, oh, that's very nice. Yeah, no problem. So that's what happened. There was the evening prayers. I did 45 minutes set. It was all fine. And then someone came up to me, one of the organizers, and said, we've got a bit of a problem with the food. There's been a bit of a delay, and then there's also a few people who aren't here yet. Is there any chance you can just carry on? A bit like what you said, and I was like, I'm doing like four or five things over this weekend. I didn't want to just stand there being hilarious to everybody. So I said, well, how about if we do like a Q&A type thing and ask me anything type thing? Because I've got loads of anecdotes that aren't really,
You just need a queue up, a little setup to it.
Exactly. So they said, oh, that's a good idea. So the rabbi came up and said, very, kindly, Rachel's agreed to do an ask me anything question and answer session. So, who would like to kick off? And a few people asked me. It was all lovely. And then, and just so you can picture it, where I was standing was actually the bima, the platform in front of the ark where the Sefer Torah, the scrolls are kept, right? They're kept in a special, very highly elaborate cupboard. All the Torah scrolls all in their finery. They have like beautiful velvet on them and silver ornaments, whatever. So that's where I'm standing, literally like you know, the everlasting light dangling on top of me, and
Right.
I'm on the special platform. And so, because it essentially was functioning as a stage, but someone asked a question, and I don't remember what the question was, but I suddenly thought, oh, that made me think of a particular anecdote. And I thought, God, I haven't said this in so long. I don't think I've ever done this in a short gig before. Okay, I'll go for it now. And about three quarters of the way through, I realised the reason I'd never told that story in a synagogue setting is because it has a swear in it.
Right.
Not because I swear, but because it's a conversation with another
Okay.
person and they do. And so I got to that point, but I was sort of too invested in it. When I couldn't suddenly
No.
stop. So I got to the end and then I kind of tamed it down
Right.
with a, like, you know, a fiddlesticksy words.
Yeah.
And it just died a death. Like, it was so funny. But even I felt like I just couldn't stand there 10 feet from a Torah scroll and quote somebody else's sweary word.
Yeah.
That
Oh,
was
it's
quite
tough,
hard.
isn't it? Fiddlesticks
But
on the
Jewish
roof.
audiences can be very hard. I think that they're quite hard on their own. When
Right.
I've done when I've booked for synagogue or Jewish charity events, and we've had a mixed lineup where it's not all Jews, the Jews they're very much like, okay, so I knew your great grandma, she was hilarious. I
Right.
don't think you're going to be as funny as her, but I'm
Okay.
prepared to wait and see if you're going to entertain me.
Right. Yeah.
So that's quite hard. Whereas then the non-Jewish act comes on. I think everyone wants them to feel welcome, so they give them all the
Okay.
love.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we have to work a bit harder.
I've always wondered, you know, because there does seem to be this history of humor and comedy within the Jewish faith
Yeah.
that maybe as Christians we sort of, I don't know, lack a little. I think there seems to be a lot of Christians who, you know, I love these Christians who sort of say, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's the Christian faith is full of joy, and I think is it? Do you want to tell your face sometimes? You know, because some gigs you sort of go, okay, we can have fun, but we need to remind ourselves of that sometimes.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know whether it's storytelling or just community and all of these sorts of things that just help us share humour, I suppose. I don't know, but
Oh, it does.
yeah.
There's always more that unites us than divides us. I think that's true of all people. But yeah, there is. I mean, that is part of Jewish culture, is humor, and it's also satire, I think, more than
Yeah.
just like general comedy, because Jews have used humor to combat oppression forever. Like, that's just, it's a genetic thing, I think. If you look at, and I'm not suggesting you actually do, but if you look at the Talmud, one of the oldest collections of Jewish writing about religious practice, it's mainly like rabbis arguing and occasionally taking the mick out of each other.
Right,
You
yeah.
know, like, I can't believe, quoting people in a sarcastic tone and whatever. So there's always, so it's sort of like, we're funny because it's a serious business. Like, life is a serious business. The minutiae of life and the detail of religious life is so complex, really, that you can either, you laugh or you cry. And yeah, I think it's just super cultural. Whereas I don't know, I think it's about how different faiths have responded to the way they've been treated by other people in history. And I guess for Christianity, it sort of was born out of quite a, you know, in its early days, it involved quite a lot of trauma.
Yeah,
So
there's
maybe
that,
that's why
isn't
it's a
there?
bit more serious. Whereas
Maybe.
we've had trauma carrying along in waves forever, so we've got used to
Maybe we us Christians, we've had it too good for too long. We're not, you know, we
it
don't have the reason to laugh. But it's without wanting to, I mean, it's impossible to not get bogged down with such things. But with the current news as it is, you know, I was looking today at I think she's a Ukrainian comedian who's now in New York. And she was saying on Twitter about some things I want you to know about Odessa, about her home city of Odessa. And she talks about the huge role that humor plays there. And they have a festival of humor and festival of comedy. And but then she talked about the very specific sort of humor and how it's about. I glanced at it briefly as I was having my coffee. I have to look it up again. But this idea of, I think it was about sort of one-upmanship and pastiche and. Yeah, as you said, sort of kind of satire, I suppose, to a degree as well. But she even get the example she gave. She said, "Here's the joke that we have, or one of the popular jokes there is, like, why is it that people in Odessa always answer a question with a question, and the other person says, 'Do we?' you know, and
That's an
lots of
old
stuff.
Jewish joke,
Oh, there
and
you are. There you are.
there was a big Jewish community there. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of us about. Stuff happened a number of years ago, didn't end well. That's a very old
Well,
Jewish
there you
joke.
go. There you are, you see. It's all kind of culture moving around and but and then being proud of their humor
Yeah.
roots and all that sort of stuff.
My husband and I actually lived in Belarus when we were first married. We went to do community work. So yeah, we're full on Jews. We go off not mission in a missionary way, because it wasn't about bringing people into the flock, but providing for people who were in the flock already but maybe didn't have those resources. And during that trip, we spent some time in the Ukraine in Kiev. And so I'm finding the news, obviously, it's distressing on so many levels, but also like remembering people that we met and experiences that we had over there. Yeah, tough. These are very tough days.
It is, I suppose, and I hate to say the beginning of any crisis because it is the beginning, isn't it? But it just that adjustment. Same with the pandemic. You know, there was a real sort of low to begin with, and then we work out ways to try and cope better. But it is awful, obviously, in an ongoing capacity. I've certainly found as a comedian as well as a writer, and trying to. I've got projects. I'm trying to, you know, either where I'm committed to write a thing for this, write a thing for that, or stuff that I'm just trying to come up with. But it's stifling, you know. It's all well. I'm not trying to make it all about me, but just as a way of looking forward, is that thing of it feels stifling in a creative way because how can you create when all this is going on?
Yeah, it feels very superficial
It
to
does.
write jokes about bees when all that's going on in Ukraine. But on the other hand, you know, people need it. They need, you know, people need the laughter, and not just here. They need it there, because when you're laughing, you're surviving. There's a lot of interesting work that's been done around humor in the Holocaust, and you know, the fact that people crack jokes in the camps. I mean, the most inhumane things were happening, but people still need to laugh. I think, you know, I've got a podcast with our mutual friend Philip
Yes, indeed.
Simon.
Tell us about your podcast. I've not even mentioned your podcast. How
But that's
rude of me.
okay. No,
Tell us about
it's
it.
called Jew Talking to Me,
Excellent
and
title.
we speak to Jewish people from across the religious spectrum and across the entertainment industry about their Jewishness, but in a very non-educational way. It's really like, what's your favorite food? What's the most interesting feud you've ever come across? You know, what's lots of things about childhood and just messing around stories. Yeah, so it's like a Graham Norton-y type chat show. And why am I telling you this? It was relevant to what we were just saying.
You're talking about humour in the Holocaust and how that was in the camps, how that came about.
Right, he studied that for his degree. That's what I
Okay.
was going to say. He did for his dissertation, I think. He did a project on that, and I also speak on that subject, and it's something we both quite passionate about and speak a lot about. And we were chatting about it the other day, and we both concluded at the same time that I'd have been chucked out of the train on the way to the camp just because I've been cracking. You know, when I'm stressed, that's my default, is to just joke, 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 and usually really inappropriate and quite irritating, sometimes quite dad jokey style material. And they wouldn't have put up with me. I'd have been like, I've been thrown from that wagon long before. So that probably would have been my fate. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. I do a workshop on that, and I tell jokes that were written by people in the camps, in the ghettos, pre and post-war, and I deliver them like stand up. Like, I don't just read them out from the sheet. I perform them, and then we discuss how it makes us feel in the room. And I feel quite strongly about keeping the voices of murdered people alive. You know, that's my. It's all got a bit dark now, but as opposed to just saying, "Oh, this makes me uncomfortable." It's okay if it makes you uncomfortable, and I kind of feel like that about all comedy. Like, it is okay if it makes you uncomfortable, makes you think. That's not a problem if you're not punching down in it, but it's making you think or making you concerned or bringing an awareness of something. That's fine. You don't have to find everything instantly hilarious. But I don't think you should be banning those jokes because of your discomfort.
Absolutely. Wow. I think fascinating. I wish it, you know, obviously we wish it weren't a world where we had to have such conversations, but it's certainly true. And yeah, we have to got to keep laughing, keep creating, and in these tough times, absolutely. I don't know where to go now. I tell you what I will say though
I've bought it
is
because I've Godwin Laws. Godwin's Lord, the conversation. I couldn't say the words,
Yeah,
yeah,
that one, that one. Yeah.
by bringing up the Holocaust.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Interesting thing as well, I was just thinking, is that we are chatting today, but actually we also spoke, was it only yesterday? I think it was yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
For the Religion Media Centre podcast, which again, words I have to get in the right order, Religion Media Centre podcast, which is a new podcast, a second episode we're into now. And I've never heard so many guests on a single podcast. We've got like six different hosts who've all got one, two or three guests each. And as a result, we had like 5 minutes at the very end, if that.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. It goes to show that because that what we're talking about now is, I think, would be great to have on something like that. But you can't run out. You can't just go into that, can you? You sort of only get into that like 20 minutes into this conversation. You can sort of start to talk about these things. But it's so important to do so, especially in a time of crisis like this, like we find
Yeah.
ourselves in.
And I think it's important to have empathy as well. I wish that more comedians had some empathy. That's just my personal feeling, in terms of what and how they deliver to people, because we are dealing with human beings. And I'm not saying that a subject should be off limits, but I think it's so important to remember that there are other human beings in the room. So say what you want to say, do it however you like, but just have a consciousness that it's a community when you're in that space. That's what's exciting about it, like, of course, and that's why I kind of wanted to be a club comic and not just a synagogue performer who goes like from community school. I'm lucky that I get to do that as well. I'm not complaining. No complaints. Please do book me for your synagogue
That
events, your bar
was
mitzvah hosting or whatever. But because the unpredictability and the excitement of that interaction with the audience is what I was really interested in. That's what I found exciting. That's what I wanted to do. I was just thinking about what you said before about the conference thing that you went to, because there's a big Jewish arts and culture conference every year called Limud. It's now called Limud Festival because everything's a festival, and it's over the Christmas holiday. And I've been a long-term attender and performer at that festival. I'm a piece of the furniture there. I actually got to the point where everyone thought, oh, 9 o'clock on the Sunday is Rachel Krieger's show. So I
Right.
stopped doing one then, because it isn't supposed to ever focus on any one person. It's
Okay.
an interesting big event, but it's an environment where I don't know if on the Christian circuit it gets to the point where, because there's an X number of comedians, people know who everyone is, because it's definitely like that with the Jews, to the extent that that's an environment where I'm sort of a celebrity briefly, just because of the recognition, which I find quite uncomfortable. And I had this incident that occurred just because I was thinking about you saying about you staying over, because this is a residential thing. It's in a conference center, so everyone's staying in the hotels and the events are in the conference suites and whatever. And one morning I was sitting at breakfast. It's a great big dining room. I think they feed about 1,000 people at a time. It's massive, this, you can't imagine. And someone came up to me, who I don't really know very well, and said, Rachel, are you okay? Is everything all right? And I said, yeah, why? I'm just eating my cereal. And they went, oh, because like someone saw you in the corridor yesterday and they said you looked a bit down. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm sure it was just resting bitch face. I was walking from one thing to another. Like, I
You're
wasn't
probably
thinking.
you're thinking of that topper that you didn't manage to do at that
Yeah,
gig,
almost
and
definitely.
bringing you
It's
there.
like being at the Edinburgh Fringe, but you're all living, but everyone, the audience and the performers, are all living together. It's
We have
very.
those. We have those in our circuit as well. I've just been planning today. I'm doing one in Easter called Spring Harvest, which
Oh,
is down at
lovely.
Butlins and Butlins Holiday Camp. And I've done it. I must have done a show there every year for the last 12 years, probably. Pandemic, even the pandemic, we did it online. And you stay there. If you stay the whole time, it's 5 days. I normally go for a couple of days within that. And it is
Yeah.
like that big fish, small sea thing. Comedy circuit, small fish, big sea. And
Exactly.
suddenly you go there, and the first time I did it, you go on stage and suddenly you're doing a solo show for an hour, and there are 700 people there or something who can go to other things as well. They've chosen to come along to this, and then you stay over. And you're walking out, and you nip over to the bar or the Burger King, whatever it might be, and you have conversations with people, or they point and go, "Oh, is the bloke from the thing of the thing.
Suddenly you're Michael McIntyre.
Breakfast next day. Yeah. And then you have, then you leave and you go, oh, right. And reset. There you go. Hard reset, you know.
Yeah. But,
and it, has, it is a good and a bad thing, isn't it? That sort of, it's nice for a moment, but then you sort of think, oh, yeah, if I pick my nose or, you know, or have a down moment, people are going to, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it's interesting that those things exist in both. Like, I do enjoy it. It's one of my favourite things, but it does feel like pressure. And it gives me, one of my best friends is a very well-known soap actor. And whenever I'm out and about with them, which it doesn't happen that often because it tends to be, they don't live in London. And it tends to be that if we see each other, we see each other at our houses rather than out and about, because they are, I'm being very circumspect about who
I
they
like
are.
It.
Because they get mobbed. Like, when I've been out with them, people come up for photos all the time. There's been paparazzi, there's been whatever. And in fact, never has there been a photo that involved me. Like, I was always hoping, like, who is the blonde headscarfed woman with this soap's famous person? But yeah, no help to me. But it gives me a little, going to Limerick Conference or Festival, as it's now called, every so often has given me like a little glimpse into what that might be like on a tiny, tiny microcosmic scale.
Yeah.
I am not jealous of you having to live like that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find you come away going, oh, I don't want that all the time?
No.
Like a day a year, maybe, of, you know, an hour. You know,
my kids call it that, think it's hilarious. And they, whenever I go shopping in like the very Jewish areas, they'd say, like, oh, did you get, are you Rachel Krieger today? Because that did happen. But because I, quite low profile in the community, because I'm not really interested in that. I just wanted to be a performer. I want to make you have a great time for the time we're together, and then that's it. We're like not all best friends now. I mean, maybe some of us might be, or related, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's my job and passion, but I never expected all this extra element to it. And it used to make me I'm appreciative of it, but I find it very uncomfortable because I'm not really a celebrity in that way. And my kids find it just really too funny. But interestingly enough, the pandemic has reset that for me, which I really like, because I think we've had 2 years of walking around with masks on anyway. People can't tell exactly who you are.
That's true.
But also because I haven't been doing stuff. I haven't been in the Jewish press all the time. I haven't been on all the big events all the time because they haven't existed. I've done bits online. I've done this and that. So now I feel like I can go anywhere and no one will hassle me because no one actually cares, which is sort of what I like.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you got an idea how famous you would want to be? Like, I've always thought, like, celebrity mastermind famous, maybe celebrity pointless famous. But I don't think anything beyond that. I think that'll do. I don't want Mock the Week. I want just like the, you know,
interesting.
A bit lower down. That's what I want.
I'd like to be the person on Alan Davies as yet untitled
nice.
No one's heard of, but they thought was quite funny when they told those anecdotes. So they might Google me after.
Excellent.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That would do for me. And like, the main thing is I don't care about being famous or not famous. I just want to perform and I want to have an audience. And I guess you can only have one thing with the other to an extent.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? If you can get a breakthrough to a certain degree, then you can get those gigs and you can do a tour and you just know, you know, because I'm doing a tour at the minute, but spending so much time just pushing, you know, getting posters printed and flyers at my own cost and a bit of local radio if you can. But, and then you get there and, you know, it's half full or something, but you think, oh, it'd be so good to just, I was chatting to Milton Jones the other day, who's off on tour again, and you think, oh, he's got a ready-made audience, just turns up and boom, you know, he's there. And you think, oh, that would be nice to get like halfway to that point or something. It would be even nice. But,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm lucky because the Jews will come out for me where I go around the country. Like, if they know about it, they'll come, because it's such a rarity that they feel like I'm representing. And that's a lovely, really lovely thing. I don't take that for granted for a second. But yeah, I think it's that the hustle is stressful, and seeing yourself as your commodity, I think, is quite difficult to deal with, unless you're a certain type of person, I think. And I think it's particularly hard for Brits, because I think Americans grow up thinking I could be the president. Like, that's their ethos of the country is anyone can make it, you can be a millionaire, whatever. And here we're a bit like, don't be too noisy. You know, like, keep, be polite, wait, let someone else go first, you know, don't push. And that's quite hard, because I see on the circuit the people who are very pushy are the ones who move forward
they are. I've done one gig in America in San Francisco, and it's like an open mic gig. I just thought, I'm on holiday, I'd like one gig, so I did it. And I was like 10th act on, and I was the only one not from America, but you quickly realise that every act on, they all live in San Francisco, but they're all from different parts, but anywhere, even like three states away, is treated like it's overseas, you know. So someone goes, I'm from Kansas, everyone goes, yeah, go Kansas, you know. And I walk on and go, and everyone's cheering for their places, I'm from Colorado, yeah, go Colorado. And I walk on and go, hello, I'm from Britain and it's rubbish. And they all go a bit like, huh, what? Just come on, boost yourself, fella, you know, come on, you've got a season.
Don't put Britain down.
Don't put yourself down, yeah, you're doing great, man, you know. So, and I thought, oh no, it's a joke. And they go, oh right, oh, I see, oh, he's being self-deprecating, you know. But that whole attitude to comedy there was completely different. That whole, you know, they were even saying where they're from and then pausing for 5 seconds to wait for the applause to then lift them on to the next thing, you know.
Yeah. So strange, isn't it? I mean, because now when people say, I think on the UK circuit, regardless of where you're from, people assume you're joking about it. Even if you say, you know, I'm from Kilburn or whatever, they think, oh, there's going to be a joke about Kilburn. Yeah. I mean, actually, now I say that, my opening joke is about being from Essex, so I can't really criticise.
But
I don't know. That's the nature of us.
Indeed so. So what's to conclude then? What's next for Rachel Krieger then? Is the hope to continue as a bit of kind of sacred secular mix, bit of this, bit of that? New shows,
definitely.
Edinburgh, are we doing solo shows? Are we doing, what's the plan?
We are doing solo shows. I feel weird to speak myself in the plural.
You and your unknown gendered soap actor friend.
He's not doing anything with me.
There we go.
That's not narrowing it down at all. Doing a show in Edinburgh called Pray It Forward, very on brand.
Excellent, I like it.
This conversation.
Very nice.
And it's kind of about the idea that if you're brought up feeling you always have to do your best for everybody and, you know, make things better for everybody, it can backfire and bite you on the bum. So that is the principle of that. And it's kind of the last two shows I did before that, they kind of all meld together really around that subject of expectations. So it's quite fun. So I'm doing that. And then I've also applied for bits and pieces of mopping up gaps. I haven't heard yet if I'm going to get any of those spots. But with my lockdown show that I developed, which is called... I just completely forgot what it's called. Isn't that weird?
That's just terrible. You've moved on from lockdown now.
Yeah, it's called Rachel Krieger Ultimate Jewish Mother, which is an improv show. And I've done a few performances of it live now, as well as the ones I did online, which is a really fun show about the principle of, if you're a Jewish mother, then you have all the answers. There's not a question you can ask that I can't solve. Excellent. And so I have some stuff that's prepared in terms of questions that have been asked online, because I put it out there to see what people would ask me. And also I find something that's relevant to either something in the news or the season or whatever, something that's happening. But then it's really down to what the audience asks. And then there's usually another comic, sometimes Jewish, sometimes not Jewish, but who feels that they can compete for Ultimate Jewish Mother on a question from the audience, and the audience gets to judge who they think has those qualities the best. So I've had in the live shows, I had Pauline Eyre most recently, who's Catholic.
Yeah. Right.
She was competing for a title of Ultimate Jewish Mother. I think she may have just pipped me to it, actually. And Mike Shepherd did it. He's not Jewish, or a mother, indeed.
Right, there you go. But he's ultimate. Okay. Yeah.
He gave it a good go. I thought it was very impressive. He actually brought a tin of chicken soup in the lining of his jacket to show that's his credentials.
Nice.
Everyone has to put their credentials. So yeah, so hoping to be able to do that as well. But I think ultimately, I had a tour cancelled by that whole thing that happened when someone ate a bat and then, you know, it all went haywire.
Yeah.
Of my previous, my 2019 show. So my dilemma at the moment is, do I revisit that tour that got cancelled and rebook it and go and do that, or do I go and do something else somewhere else, or do I start all again from the beginning, or just stick with Ultimate Jewish Mother? So if people want to write in and give their suggestions,
okay, so to suggest what show you do.
There's three different shows. Hineni is the one, the cancelled one, which is about imposter syndrome, and then Pray It Forward, and then Ultimate Jewish Mother. And please do come and see any of them.
Of course. It's like a line in the sand sort of moment, isn't it, when you move forward from here and go, what do I do now, do I go back and do this comedy thing, do I do the online thing, do I do a writer thing? And I'm doing a play at the minute, which I've not done for 15 years, and thought, well, let's try something different, you know. But
Yeah.
yeah, just it's creative new year, I suppose, in that
It is
sense.
a creative new year. I've had to write a couple of scripts for things recently, and it was quite nice, like you say, to get back in, because as I mentioned before, I started off in comedic theatre, and it was quite fun to be able to do that sort of those sort of bits and pieces again. But yeah, I think the variety of this is what's keeping me
Oh,
sane,
good.
actually, you
Very
know,
nice.
trying lots of different things. And yeah.
Well, long may it continue. And yes, and your podcast, Due Talking to Me as well. People should
Yes.
definitely go and subscribe to that, as I
Please
will.
do. We're about
And
to start releasing our next lot of episodes. We've just been doing lots of recording. So yeah, we're
excellent.
excited. Yeah, three series are already out there. Everyone can go and have a look at them. And then new
And
ones coming soon.
your co-host Philip Simon, who I was at drama school with
Yeah.
20 years ago now, and even back then we said, oh, we should do a show, he said, called The Ginger and the Jew. That was his plan, and because I was ginger back then, and it's he's faded now, but so it's good to see that he has found a new co-host, because The Ginger and the Jew never happened, but instead
Instead, he's got me.
there you go, quite right too.
I
Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you at an interfaith gig soon. I'm sure
hope
there's a whole
so. Yeah.
interfaith circuit out there waiting to flourish. But yes, indeed,
Well,
brilliant.
maybe should make it flourish.
Let's do that. Absolutely.
Well, thanks
Thank you,
for having
Rachel.
me.
Thank you. So that was Rachel Krieger. You can find her podcast, Due Talking to Me, on podcast platforms, and indeed find the Religion Media Centre podcast, where I am contributing a little 5-minute bit at the end of every episode. We chatted with Rachel herself here again for a little 5-minute chat on the most recent one. Chatted with Ramona Ali on the first one. She's a great Muslim journalist, and on the next one, might be looking at Milton Jones. Not entirely sure. Let's find out. So that will be a lovely thing. Thank you for joining us. This has been a Paul Carenza podcast. Do say subscribed. Next time, we're having Mr. James Carey, I believe, will be joining us on this particular podcast. I wish you well. I pray that your God would go with you. And thanks for being here. Take care. Bye for now.